How to do buggeroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. Today is Wednesday. For everyone tuning in for the important portion of the program, today is Wednesday. It is the 16th of September. This is 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi. Still recovering from yesterday, but I'm here.
Yeah, we kind of all are, one way or another. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Now, I want to talk to both of you for a second about family setup, because I feel like that was a nifty thing that was announced yesterday, but that in actuality, what it's for isn't just set your family members up with Apple Watches. I think this was like the intermediate step to turning the Apple Watch into its own device. What do you guys think?
Mm-mm. Yeah, of course. Mm-mm. We knew that's coming. Mm-mm. But the concept is brilliant. Mm-mm. In any case.
Mm-mm. Brian, I have this feeling you disagree with me. Mm-mm. I don't know what's making me think that, but I have this hunch.
Yeah, Apple is very happy to keep Apple Watch tied to iPhone.
Sure.
Oh, horse hockey.
Apple is happy as can be to keep it tied to iPhone.
No.
Apple has spoken repeatedly, John, about how the iPhone is going to be at the center of our lives and that it's going to be a viable platform for the next 50 years. That was 2 years ago that they started saying that. So 48 more years of iPhone. And Apple is just fine with that, with iPhone being managed, excuse me, Apple Watch being managed from iPhone. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things that I find very interesting about this move, but the idea of setting Apple Watch free is not one of them.
Okay. John?
Well, John gets the rebut.
Well, you know, the Macintosh used to be the center of our digital life. The digital hub. Mm-hmm. Until it wasn't anymore, and then we moved on to the phone. The watch is becoming so instrumental and so intrinsic to our lives with all the things that it can do. You want to be able to sell that device to as many people as possible. And there's millions and millions of people out there who are just not going to do an iPhone because they're committed to Android. So
and
why
this doesn't
not
change any of that.
So why not sell everybody who wants an Apple Watch an Apple Watch and let them configure it?
But that's not what family setup does.
Family setup
is not aimed at Android users because I mean
you still need the iPhone
to manage it.
No, that's not what I intended to say. I was just leveraging off of what Kelly said about an intermediate step.
Okay.
I mean, the fact that you can configure an Apple Watch from any device is probably coming. I mean, if you got a Mac.
Yeah, I don't think it's now, but yeah.
No, but eventually you'll be able to, if you have a Mac, you'll be able to configure your phone and you don't have to have a phone.
In the
your watch.
Immortal words twisted by me of some lovely ladies. Never going to do it. Never going to do it. Never, 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 never going to do it.
Like a church lady. Not going to happen.
I usually sing that. But so the.
I was hoping you would sing it, Brian. Now I'm kind of sad it didn't happen.
I cannot, like, in no way whatsoever does family setup help with all this. What family setup does do is allow families to have their kids be connected without having to get them an iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's brilliant. I like that idea because there's so many parents who are concerned about their kids being too young to have a phone, too much time spent frittering away their lives, watching YouTube videos instead of, you know, being good students. And this, but a watch provides not a big screen, provides all that tracking and information and emergency information that's so critical for kids, but doesn't allow them to spend all day long watching videos and watching Disney Plus.
Right. And so Apple is both expanding the potential market for Apple Watch,
yes.
which is yes. obviously in Apple's best interest, while yes. actually limiting the potential market for iPhone.
That's true.
And I think that, you know, it's always dangerous to start ascribing, you know, any kind of like good motivations to any company, including Apple.
Sure.
But I believe just like Apple Watch was part of Apple Watch's original inspiration was to get us out of our phones, get our faces out of our phones.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It, just like that was a thing. I believe that Apple's motivation here is probably towards the good side, allowing those kids to communicate, allowing those kids to be connected, to be tracked, as John noted, mm-hmm. by parents. And at the same time, to make it where they don't need an iPhone. And considering how many, especially well-off kids, well-off families,
yeah.
are getting iPhones for children at a younger and younger age, mm-hmm. Apple making that not necessary is, you know, could actually have, you know, maybe it'll be offset by selling a greater number of Apple Watches, but it would take
yeah.
two or three Apple Watches,
mm-hmm.
depending on the model, to make up for the loss of one iPhone sale. And right. I think that's pretty nifty. I think that Apple should get some credit for that. I doubt Apple will get any credit for that. I haven't heard or seen anyone else mention it, but I think that's what's going on. And I utterly reject the idea that Apple is like, you know, and step one in making Apple Watch a standalone device. It's so much easier to manage these things from a bigger screen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but while we're talking about...
the watch gets more and more powerful and gets more and more memory, and there'll be new capabilities for the Apple Watch that we haven't foreseen yet. And there'll come a critical tipping point when the power of the Apple Watch is sufficient to do all those things.
No, but it still is going to have a tiny screen with no real input.
Yeah.
Except for a holographic display floating in space above the Apple Watch.
Okay, well, while we're talking about Apple's bigger screens, let's talk about the bigger screen they announced yesterday, which is the new iPad Air and the updates to the regular iPad. Now, John, I think you and I have the same question right now on a basic level, which is, like, I've taken a good long look at this iPad Air, and I don't know what it is about the Pro that makes me want to buy one anymore.
Yeah, we talked about that in the morning meeting. The differentiation may well be just the camera and a few other things that are specifically aimed at pros.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked at that iPad Air. I guess it's the fourth generation iPad Air, but I haven't seen in mm-hmm. much use of the term iPad Air 4. But it is fourth generation, and I look mm-hmm. at that and I see the square edges, and I see the Touch ID on the power button. And the design and the power, and I go, I want one of those. I don't need one. I mean, I've got two iPads, and my wife has one, but
mm-hmm.
I look at it and I go, but it'd be sure nice to have one of those around the house. It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I have an iPad Pro. It's the last Lightning Pro. I don't know what the designation for it is, but it was the last iPad Pro that had a Lightning connector. And I think the Air would be a worthy upgrade for my device. I'm not doing anything hardcore with it. I'm not Andrew. Like, it's not my primary computing device or anything like that. But I feel like it would probably have more than enough power to do what I want to do for a long time. Because it's always kind of been an ancillary device for me. I don't live on one. And I don't write books about them like Brian does. So what do you think of this new one, Brian?
It's certainly powerful. It is the processor is seemingly better than the processor in the current iPad Pro, which means that the next iPad Pro should be pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's got an A14 Bionic.
Yep.
Yeah.
So... That's all. I mean, it's a great device, and Apple may well be selling fewer iPad Pros because of this iPad Air. It's definitely a terrific device.
Mm-hmm. It looks, like I said, it looks super cool aside from the color, which I think is kind of neat that they, you can get them in colors now. It's got the square edges like the iPad Pro does. It's got Touch ID and not Face ID for people for whom that's a consideration. But the Touch ID isn't a button on the front. It's the power button, which I think is really cool. On the top or on the side, of course, depending how you hold it. And it looks, it's got a really nice chip in it. It's got a really nice display. The camera is not, I don't know if it's the same camera, but it has, it doesn't have the capability of the camera in the iPad Pro.
Yeah, it doesn't have the LiDAR.
The LiDAR, yeah. So that's about the only thing in it. And quite honestly, I don't know a lot of people who are buying an iPad specifically to get the LiDAR scanning for it. So
no, there haven't been enough apps to, that are doing anything with it at all.
So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be really interesting.
It doesn't have Face ID.
Right.
And I would rather see all of Apple's devices have Face ID and lose Touch ID personally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Apple, the embedding Touch ID into the sleep wake power button at the top is great and nifty if you're going to keep Touch ID.
Yeah.
Right. But I would rather see all of Apple's devices be consistent with Face ID across the board.
Right. Well,
we've talked about that before in the past, Brian. We thought that Apple would uniformly replace Touch ID systematically on lower end models as it became.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that has not been the case.
Economies of scale, and hasn't been the case.
Yeah, it has not.
And the question is, why is Apple doing that?
Well, yeah, why bifurcate the market? Why have this dichotomy in how devices work? Because anybody using, you know, two of those devices, one which works one way and one which works another way, is going to have moments where they do the wrong thing. Or, you know, just automatically do the wrong thing.
There must be some sort of usage profile that Apple's aware of that we're not, that makes them think that there's a market for this.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, there's still a market, obviously, for Touch ID, because the regular iPad still has the Touch ID home button on the front. They didn't even move it there. So Touch ID is certainly not going away.
Wait a minute. You're right. The
brand new iPad at $329
has got the
still
home
has a home button on the front. Yeah, doesn't it? Am I wrong?
Sometimes it's cost.
Was I drunk yesterday?
Sometimes it's just usage.
It has a home button.
I'm looking.
No, I thought so too.
I think so.
That seems weird. Yeah, it does.
Yes, it does.
It does, in fact, have a home button. Huh.
Well, that's where they just
crazy, man.
Out,
make them all the same, dude. Make them all the same.
We've also got USB-C and Lightning still, so like, there's definitely cleanup to do.
Make that all the same too.
Yeah, I would definitely like that very much.
Well, the engineer spreadsheet says you can't do it at that price. That's what's happening.
Yeah, probably. I do want to spend a minute on Fitness Plus, because this is new and interesting, and I want to find out if either of you are interested in signing up for it when it's available. We saw it yesterday. It's not out yet. They said later, I think in 2020, is the official stance on that. So, yeah. So, Christmas. if we get there. So, what about this, Brian, appeals to you with Fitness Plus?
I absolutely and positively need a new fitness platform that I can ignore.
I'm really glad you're excited about it then. Hooray.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I've got like 3 gym memberships.
Wow.
That I don't use.
Look at all the money you could save by ignoring just this one instead of all 3 of those.
Instead of all the, I don't actually have any gym memberships. I am excited about Fitness Plus. I also am aware enough of myself to know that I probably won't get around to actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe I'll try it out, and maybe it'll be life changing for me. Who knows? So I certainly need the exercise. I think it's terrific. I think that Apple has just put the kibosh on a lot of put the hurt on and a lot of third party fitness trainer programs.
Peloton.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like Peloton, the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and you know, the Venn diagram of Apple customers and customers who can afford a, you know, trainer subscription service mm-hmm. with a device, that Venn diagram has got a whole lot of overlap.
Yeah. It's almost one circle, I think.
Yeah.
Probably
not entirely, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then if, you know, if John has it right, you know, soon every Android wear on the planet's going to be walking around with their standalone Apple Watch, LOL. And so then it will become absolutely and positively one circle.
So, John, are you into this?
Well, like Brian, I have a physical routine, exercise routine that I follow.
Did you say unlike Brian or like Brian? Because if you said like Brian,
Well.
Yeah, so let me correct that for you, John. Unlike Brian, I have a physical fitness routine.
John has a physical fitness routine. Okay.
All right.
But thank you.
I misunderstood.
I appreciate the projection of good values on and, you know, good practices on to me, man. I love you for that.
I think there are a lot of people who, pandemic now not interfering and wildfires not interfering and
2020 and not interfering.
Issues, who feel like the capabilities of the Apple Watch and the phone to track and manage their fitness was just a little bit too limited. And this follows Apple's standard procedure of coming out with something simple, see how it goes, mm-hmm. test it, and then expand on it as customers, you know, wish and find useful.
I really like the price point on this. It's $80 a month. I know people who have gym membership or a year. I mean, if you pay for it, it's $80 a year. I know people who have gym memberships that are more than $80 a month. So for a lot of people, I think there's some appeal here. I think it'll be great. I'm looking forward to trying it. I kind of want to actually stick with it. I don't know how well that will go. But I'm definitely looking forward to trying it out. One of the other things I liked about it was that it was equipment agnostic. They said a bunch of them are things that aren't going to take any sort of external gear at all. And you can use whatever treadmill, whatever bike, whatever rowing machine. If that's what you have, then use that and, you know, let's go. And I thought that was also pretty nifty. But the other thing we want to talk about with our few minutes left here is Spotify. And John, you have a bee in your bonnet about Spotify.
I do. I saw that article yesterday by Andrew, and I thought how I'm going to get into real trouble here, but I have to be careful about how whiny Spotify is being.
Okay.
A company that has a rich selection of products, a company that works hard, a company that's successful, a company that has money and spends it on developing new services and products, has every right to bundle their products together. You know, I was thinking about, it was like two things I know. College students who, you know, complain to my wife as a professor about how that's not fair, you know, as a euphemism for, you know, I didn't pay attention, I'm not working hard, but I want you to make an accommodation for me because I didn't do it right. And so the psychological umbrella for that is that's unfair. You say that all the time. That's pretty immature corporate language for Spotify to use. And the second thing is it doesn't make any technical sense. I mean, if the Ford dealer says, hey, if you buy four tires from us, we'll throw in floor mats. And, you know, some company that makes floor mats says, you know, that's not fair. You can't do that. And it just seems kind of whiny and doesn't stand up to technical merit. Spotify, as it has been pointed out to me, is a successful company. They've got relationships with Hulu, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to cash in on this atmosphere that the corporate giants are maybe too big or abusing us, which Facebook is doing. You heard it here first. it is a sort of like appealing to, it's demagoguery. It's appealing to people's emotions and trying to leverage off of a false sense of logic. Mm-hmm. And Spotify should just not try to do what they're doing. They should just be mature, make great products, be successful. Instead of trying to get emotions on their side.
Are you kidding? What? That's what I... What? Why wouldn't Spotify want to try to capitalize off of stoking emotions? Apple stokes emotions all the time. Apple's marketing is all about stoking emotions.
Yeah, but in the best possible way.
You're
in an honorable way.
You're projecting your own robotic look at life onto what companies should be doing. And I say that with the greatest of love.
You say that with the greatest of love to somebody who got mad at Apple's last appeal to people's emotions instead of intellect. Because he came here in Charlotte and I told him that wasn't the way it worked. I agree with you, John, on the one hand, that for Spotify to just sort of come out and complain about this seems like a pointless move to me on their part. It doesn't seem like to me they're appealing to anybody. It seems like they're just trying to get out ahead of, you know, this, like, this is why our earnings are terrible, is because Apple locked everything up and we can't do anything about it. And geez Louise, this is why our numbers suck. Like, I feel like that's kind of what they're doing. And I don't like that any better than you do, but I don't know that I find it any sort of appeal in any way to anybody. There's nobody I know who's going to be into this. I mean,
the Spotify's whining is ridiculous. If you can't compete, that's kind of on you. I had great empathy for Spotify's argument that it's very unfair for Apple to compete against third-party services. And then still take the 30% from those third party services.
Like, that's a valid point. I can see that.
Apple Music not having to pay Apple 30%, or, you know, paying Apple 30%, and then Apple goes, "Thank you very much, left hand. You know, my right hand will enjoy spending this."
Yes,
I don't think that that's fair. When Apple enters a market, they should probably give competitors a break.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
But this idea that Apple, you know, that it's unfair for Apple to do a bundle, it's just that's ridiculous. Spotify needs to step up to the plate and compete. And the reality is that the large tech companies, the unfortunately Facebook, but the Apples, the Googles, the Microsofts, mm-hmm. are in a better position to offer these kinds of services than standalone companies like Spotify are. And it sucks for Spotify. That's true. But it turns out, and let me check my notes here. Yeah, life is not fair.
What?
Okay. And neither is business.
Breaking news from Brian Chaffin.
Competition is inherently unfair. Those who execute well are going to succeed, and those who don't execute are going to lose, and that's unfair.
Well, apparently, those who don't succeed are going to sit home and issue press releases complaining about their lack of success. That's a little different story. So,
oh, and Amazon, sorry. another big company that is really, you know, that has the ability to leverage multiple.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Services and platforms.
Yeah. So, and Spotify isn't complaining about Amazon and A-Ladies and, you know, Prime Music and taking Prime things away. Yeah. So
yeah, your Prime subscription gets you all of the things.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. So thank you both very much for being here. John Martellaro, thanks for coming by.
I'm saying goodbye to the bee in my bonnet. Buzz off.
Thank you very much, John. Buzz. Inferently unherent Martellaro.
I really screwed that up, didn't I?
It was beautiful, and I enjoy it very much. Also with me, Brian Chaffin. Thank you, Brian, so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Kelly. Good stuff.
I am your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.